All right, we are going to continue the hour by talking about housing. Back in 2019, the Chamber for a Greater Chapel Hill Carborough launched an initiative called Big Bold Ideas, soliciting ideas from the community for something big, something bold, something dramatic that's going to change the face of our community in a positive way. They got a lot of feedback and a lot of ideas, a lot of conversations after that, and they have hit on their big bold idea that they're going to try to manifest in the next few years. The goal is 1,500 new affordable housing units by the year 2026. And we're joined in the studio to get an update on the initiative and where things stand by a couple special guests. Aaron Nelson heads up the Chamber for Greater Chapel Hill Carborough, and Jennifer Player is the CEO of Orange Habitat, also instrumental in the Big Bold Ideas initiative and this particular goal as well. Jennifer, Aaron, thank you both so much for being with us today. Good morning.
It is great to be here. Good to see you.
So I just did the 10-second summary, Aaron, on the origins. Was that about right?
It was perfect, yes. It was a remarkable process. 500 ideas coming in throughout the community. We solicited the ideas in English and Spanish and Korean and Burmese and Mandarin, and then went through a community sorting process. What were the best ideas? And 20,000 community votes were cast, and then we put 200 people in a room for 4 hours.
Wow.
And you can't leave until we agree on three things. And you're right, one of them was dramatically more affordable housing. The other is closing the achievement gap and making sure that all children are successful. And the third was supporting entrepreneurship, innovation, and workforce development. The idea that got underway, and then we had COVID, right? And
right.
We were delayed, but not denied. And we have continued to work. And over the last, and Jennifer can tell more about it, but over a year of community conversations with housing experts and locals on what our housing goal ought to be. And we appreciate you inviting us in today to talk specifically about 1,500 affordable units in the next 5 years.
How did you, Jennifer, hit on that particular number and that particular time frame?
Yeah, it was a bit of an art and a science, I think you would say. You know, leaving the community convention that Aaron referenced, we didn't really know what the number would be. We knew that the gap in the community is over, at the time, was 12 to 13,000 units. And so we sort of went back, looked at what had been developed in any given year, took some averages, and then increased it and said, you know, if we're going to be big and bold, let's see if we can do dramatically more than that. And the time frame was really, you know, it takes a long time to get developments through, and to get some of these initiatives are going to be, you know, happening in the second, third, and fourth year. And so that 5-year time frame felt long enough to give us a runway to do that, but also short enough that we can hopefully have the endurance and stamina to keep it going through that long.
And when we're talking about affordable housing, there is a definition of affordability. It's you're spending 30% or less of your income on housing from month to month and year to year. Every housing is affordable for someone. So who are we talking about this housing being affordable for?
Yeah, so that those definitions became really important early on after we set the goal, which, as you said, what do we consider to be affordable? So we went with the federal definition of affordable, which is, you know, if you're cost burdened, if you're spending more than 30% of your income on housing, and that actually includes not just your rent or your mortgage, but other housing costs. So if you have an HOA or if you have utilities, those types of things, property taxes that go into that. So we decided to stick with that federal definition of affordability. And then in looking at the qualifications, you know, a lot of the nonprofit developers in town have different area median incomes that we serve. And so we really said, well, let's look at how we can help different income levels. And within the strategies and tactics, we tried to look at what are the strategies that we need for folks at the lower end of the AMI versus folks who are at the upper end of the AMI. And so that's why. So we decided to go up to 120% AMI, which is our friends over at Community Home Trust serve that income level, but really trying to focus it on under 80% for most of the units.
I've always been curious about this. Does AMI work well as a benchmark in like a community like Chapel Hill Carborough, where the average income is pretty high? Like, we're an affluent community, but there's a lot of people who have that need.
But AMI, and that's for those listening, area median income, and it's not just Chapel Hill's. Our area median income is based on our metropolitan statistical area. Orange County, Durham County, Chatham County, Person County. So it is a much broader area. Mm-hmm. And so when we use the median income of that area, and then you can do it by family of four or family of three. So for family of four, it's about $80,000 is area median income. Half of the people making more, half less. 80% of median income would take you down to about $55,000 a year, a family of four. And that implies two wage earners, right? Usually, mm-hmm. though it could be a single person and three kids. We think it's more important to talk about the humans. Mm-hmm. AMI is federal, but let's talk about a first-year firefighter married to a first-year teacher. Well, they would combine for about $80,000. But what if it is a full-time minimum wage earner? That's $16,500. That's what that person makes, $16,500. But if they are also two, so we're taking a look, what are the humans, and then can we build and price housing for those folks? And so when you do the math, if you made $36,000 a year, that's $3,000 a month, you have $1,000 to spend on housing. Mm. And we know in this community, there's not much to rent at that price. And there's a host of strategies that Jennifer and her group of brilliant 20-some-odd folk getting together for a year came up with in order to deliver 1,500 units.
And those are the reasons why we're here today. We're talking with Jennifer Player and Aaron Nelson, talking about the Big Bold Ideas Initiative, 1,500 new affordable housing units by 2026, one of three goals that are coming out of the initiative and the one we're focusing on. And you just had a presentation recently where you presented the six strategies for making this happen in practice and where things are in terms of the current status. What are the six strategies?
Yeah, so I'll start by saying that we decided to kind of bucket it into what are the barriers that we see and how can we solve some of those barriers. And so one is funding, of course, in order to keep it affordable, especially in this time frame that we're in right now with the land at the cost that it is and the cost of construction. We really need to increase the funding. And so that's the first strategy, is how do we generate more funds to create more affordable housing? And that will include things like more bond funds in the community, increasing or dedicating more of our property tax to go toward housing. And we're also researching what it might look like to have either a county or a regional housing trust fund. So that's really the number one biggest thing. We can't do anything unless we have this funding from our local, state, federal government to be able to invest in affordable housing. And then again, the next challenge is land in Orange County. We all know that we have a rural buffer. And so really within the places that can be developed, land is very expensive. And so are there ways that we can get creative and think bigger and bolder about how we might utilize the land in Orange County? We did include a strategy around, are there pieces within the rural buffer that really maybe not be rural anymore? So certainly not doing away with the rural buffer, but I think it's important to at least look at that again and say, are there areas where affordable housing would be a great fit within the rural buffer? So that, looking at the land and mobile home parks for redevelopment, that land is very valuable. And if it's not an affordable housing developer, some market rate developer is going to come in and buy it. So we want to identify that and really look all throughout, you know, who owns land? Are there municipal land, publicly owned land, do other nonprofits or churches own land that they might be willing to, you know, dedicate for affordable housing? So the land is the other piece. And then lastly, I would say we kind of have this idea about how do we make affordable housing easier to build? And that's really on the policy regulation side. So there are things we can work with our, you know, local governments, elected officials to remove some barriers, time constraints, et cetera, to be able to make affordable housing easier to build.
What are some of those barriers?
Well, yeah. I think Jennifer summarized that well, right? Money, land, and I think we can be real creative. What if the parking lots of elementary schools or public schools were available? How many units could you build if you moved 20 parking spaces out of play? So land, money, regulation. But we think there's a role for the private sector to play, for employers to play. And there's some really creative models. Is it down payment assistance? What if you say, I'll give you $10,000 towards a down payment on your house, and I'll forgive it over the next 3 years. You work here, and we'll forgive that. We've seen that. That's how the Teaching Fellows program worked, right? We'll pay for your education, and we'll forgive it if you'll do this work. But it also could just be straight subsidy. Come and work for us, and we'll give you $200 a month towards housing. Employers do that now. We'll buy your gym membership, buy your bus pass, and why is housing not in the bag of tricks? So we think the private sector really can step up and support employees, and that there's a role for those folks to play.
I really like that idea, because you're right. Like, there are some incentives that are just so standard, or some that are really common perks, and housing is so rarely one of them.
Well, let's go even further. It costs $20,000 to build a parking space for the employee if you're going to do a deck or a surface lot. What if instead of giving $20,000, we're going to give you $20,000 towards your down payment on the promise that you never park on campus? You're going to have to be on a bus line. You're going to have to, and there's models that we see. We tried it at our own organization, the Chamber. We did a down payment assistance for an employee, and then we forgave it over time. And they are now the head of their homeowners association in a community home trust house. When they never would, it would have taken them years in order to save what they needed in order to make that down payment.
Well, the other thing that's so interesting about that is that, you know, think about, like, an employer says, okay, we have a 401k match. But if you have someone who's coming into the workforce and they're 25 or 30, then really what they might need now is, if I could have a housing stipend or a housing down payment, then over time, the investment and the wealth and equity that's built in that house will be way more valuable than if they had put money into this 401k. And so I think, again, thinking about that in a new way, what if we gave employees choice? Would you rather have a 401k, or would you rather have something like a housing, you know, a housing stipend or money for a down payment? So those are the types of things. And to me, this is what made the big, bold ideas exciting. You know, I live in the affordable housing community. I was just on a call this morning with the Housing Coalition. I mean, I am in this world all the time. But we really wanted to bring new voices to the table and say, it's not a problem that just one group of people needs to fix, but how can we include everyone in the community? How can we include market rate developers and employers and, of course, local government and residents who live here? You know, everybody has a role that they can play. And so I think, you know, having the backing of the Chamber is what really gives this a new edge compared to maybe what we've done in the past.
And we think housing is essential to recruit and retain the talent that we need, right? And we've looked at, you know, what does it take to get people to want to live in this community and work here? And we know what the ghost of Christmas future is like, right? Ebenezer Scrooge looks 20 years in the future and realizes how miserable life is, and we see what that is. That's Vail. That's Boulder. Mm-hmm. That's now Boise and some other places. What choices will we make to make sure that our employees are not driving 45 minutes, and that we are not a community simply of those with resources having to import our labor?
What's the best idea that has come out of all these conversations that's made you go, ooh, I like that?
We may each have our own.
Yeah, one thing I'm excited about is we had this idea that we could, you know, again, thinking about land, that we could create a map of the county and have designated zones that are affordable housing. So again, it's both rural buffer, but other publicly owned land. And even just having that knowledge, I don't know anyone who really has this knowledge of who does own all the land, and having those conversations about what might happen with the land. So I'm really excited about having something that's physical, that's a map that we can say, here are the places where, almost like an opportunity zone or other types of zones, where we really think it's public transportation, employment corridors to the university, to UNC hospitals. So that is something I think that could be a really good outcome. And I think that would be used by us, but also I could see that being used by local governments in different ways as well as a resource.
For me, it's on the employer side. It's the possibility that employers begin to participate and see this as a thing they can do. You could give someone that signing bonus or that retention bonus, but what else might you do? And we're seeing some really cool projects. In Asheville, there's a little teacher colony. They took publicly owned land, they built housing, and the State Employees Credit Union said, we'll do zero interest mortgages. What would that be like if we did something like that here? Or a monster master leasing arrangement where an employer leased 30 units of housing across our community and subsidize their employees' participation. We all have a role to play, and we're going to cobble all these things together in order to get to the 1,500 units. No one solution will deliver on all of this.
What's already been achieved?
There's even today, I was part of conversations today around funding. So, you know, our local governments right now are creating their budgets for next year. So thinking about, you know, that increase in funding, both in the property tax and in ARPA funds that are coming into our community. So I think right now we're seeing our local governments really invest in housing in a big way. I know the conversations are starting back up around the Green Tract, and that's definitely something that the Big Bold Ideas is going to be involved in, because that is one of our largest opportunities for affordable housing. And then the town also on the regulation side is piloting right now an expedited review process, which is something that is in our strategies of how can we make it easier and quicker to get affordable housing projects approved. And so they've been piloting that and looking at not just affordable housing, but other market rate developments, too. How can they expedite those processes?
In Carrboro, they are doing an inventory of all publicly owned land and what could be developed. We're going to do an intercity visit, start those back up again. Asheville is our location that we are going to head to. And they've got some really interesting, they have similar challenges and some interesting models for us to take a look at.
I heard they have a teacher colony out there.
Oh, they do. they also and have. Policies on what to do on how to develop on publicly owned land, and they have a trust. But we're having major employers are having the conversations right now with developers, with projects underway about what partnerships are possible. So this is, we've raised this into everybody's, we want housing to be in the top five things you're thinking about, and then everybody leaning in on a set of strategies to get it done.
Does it make it more or less difficult, or does it change the conversation in any way that there are so many small businesses in Orange County in our community, as opposed to like big mega corporations that can have huge packages for employees?
Well, I think we're fortunate we have both, right? So it's not Xerox or Amazon in our community. It's the University of North Carolina and the hospital and then the public school system and others. There are some major employers, and they can make big policy shifts, a little complicated because of their state relationship. But small businesses have this ability, and they are often more flexible and more creative. And we want folks to try things. Let's try it out. Like I said, at the chamber, we did a down payment assistance. How did it work? What else can folks explore? And if you are out there and exploring or want to talk more about it, check out the Big Bold Ideas website or reach out to Jennifer or myself, and we can help share some stuff with you or hear what you're doing and tell others about it.
Speaking with Jennifer Player and Aaron Nelson, Big Bold Ideas Initiative, and we got to wrap up. But as we do, next steps for the project?
Aaron just mentioned, we have a website that's bigboldideas.org where all of the affordable housing strategies and tactics are listed there. And we are working on creating a document that can be sent and produced. We're still having meetings right now with different stakeholders in the community to present these ideas, getting feedback. Is there anything you would add, change? And then sort of as we're doing that simultaneously, again, starting immediately on these strategies and tactics, how can we employ those, get them going into the community? Because it does take time.
Yep.
And so, you know, again, having budget conversations right now, talking to landowners, working on some of these developments. So so both putting some more formal tracking mechanisms, we're going to have a group of people that are going to meet, you know, every few months to say, how are we doing? How are we quantifying this? How are we doing on those goals? And at the same time, just continuing to push forward with meeting the strategies.
Aaron Nelson, last word.
It's if you want to join our coalition, then reach out to us and let us know. We want to build a broad coalition of public and private organizations signing on, saying we believe in these strategies, and apply our will and our pressure and our words and our support to policymakers, private sector, and public to get this done.
BigBoldIdeas.org is the website. Go there and find out more. Aaron Nelson, Jennifer Player, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Aaron.
Appreciate the time.